Welcome to the first Drift Life podcast. Today we're going to be talking about beginners. What car should you start with or is good to start with in the UK grassroots scene? Modifications, if you need any, and how to progress and how to figure out what's best as the next step. You join us as we dive straight into talking about Matsuri at Anglesey. Myself and Lewis are sort of sharing what our experience was like in this 2018 season, and then we dive straight into the beginner's guide. Hope you enjoy it, guys. Thanks.
How was it?
Yeah.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah, what were the tracks like? Tom was saying the national track was really good fun.
Yeah, I really like all of the tracks, really. The hairpin's cool, like the Togo track's really cool. But out and out, adrenaline rush, it's got like, I just really enjoy the national track. It's not the most technical.
Look tricky.
The Togo track's like really, really technical, and it's like to get the right line takes like good work to dial in, which I still didn't really dial it in by the end of the Sunday. But the national track was just out and out, balls to the wall, like adrenaline fueled, especially following.
It's literally the edge of your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I like fully geeked out when I got back, and like, because my speedo isn't that accurate, I fully geeked out and like worked out tire circumference and ratios and stuff to try and give me an accurate idea. And you're talking like 8, 9 mile an hour going into the hairpin.
Yeah, it looks fast on the video.
So like, it's definitely like hands down the fastest like layout I've gone, like top of force. So it's really good. But yeah, even with it being so fast, it was actually quite easy to follow someone. It doesn't really make sense, but I felt quite confident following people, like relatively close.
The best, like driving, the most exciting driving I've probably done with you right in my eardrum. It was amazing, to be honest.
Yeah, it was really good. I didn't like at first when you went out, and I was umming and ahhing, like, how are you actually going to like take it? So obviously I hadn't watched you. So, and yeah, it's surprisingly, even at that speed, how you can like react to someone else's line that you hadn't even like driven behind before.
It was
dead good. Dead good. I crashed so many times over the course of the weekend, which goes to show like it was fun to push your car to the limits. And the margin for error was obviously quite slim as well, with all the track tight, like with all the tyres knitted around the outside.
Yeah, Matt said, it was tractor tyres all the way. Like, it wasn't. It was tractor tyres mostly on the annoying straight on the initiations.
Yes.
And then it went to normal sort of not-so-scary tyres.
Yeah, it was like motorbike tyres. And I hit, like you say, I hit the tyres three times. Like two of them were like pretty bad. One of them only backwards and dented in my back panel like a tiny bit, but considering the speed I went in, if it was a truck tire, like it would have made a hell of a mess. But like, thankfully, it was only a small dent. But yeah, it's like
seeing you stand on Saturday night with that hammer just spinning it round in despair, like,
oh, just fuming. It was just like, I was just trying to keep my mind off it. I was not happy.
It was a good like hour of Lewis just standing there like,
just rage. I think it was like a little bit of rage / embarrassment because everyone had seen me like cock up like on the night demo, and like frustration in my own car as well. It was like a combination of the three. But yeah, it was like, luckily it's like costly. It's not too costly because I've got quite a lot of the bits, but it's just one of those things that happen. It just could have been avoided just by saying no, I'm all right. But I don't know,
dude. I think anyone who is a driver would have seen your performance and saw like, oh, it's cold tires, like it's freezing out there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I hope so anyway. It's just, it's the easiest thing to blame it on, isn't it? So, typical race driver, Excuses.
Every person that came around that corner were thinking, well, they've clearly been queuing up, not driving anywhere for ages. And full send.
Mm.
I was just impressed that everyone was going full send.
In the summer, I reckon it would be a blast, but just it was so bitterly cold that night. They were letting us do like burnouts and stuff to actually warm tyres up at the start. And they were like filming. So like for like the official video, I imagine. But and I think that was probably a bit my bit bad on my part because I ended up like warming up my rear tyres, which if anything gave me more rear end grip, which was going to like emphasize even more. So all I'd done is just like made it even worse for myself. So but it's one of those hindsight's a bitch. And you know, I had a good laugh and I tipped my hat to all of the guys that were driving just as fast as they were throughout the whole day in the night because you really couldn't see a lot. Considering how much you could see as a spectator, when you're driving, you couldn't see anything. It was... It's super scary.
I could not see the following car.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought, how is this guy actually staying near anyone? Because he was just completely engulfed. From a spectator point of view as well. Like,
yeah, the smoke was just ridiculous. Like driving through the thickest fog you've ever driven through. At, you know, full peg, like, and you're just thinking, any minute someone could just be facing the opposite way through this, like, fog. And you could just hit them head on, like no worries. So that was a bit scary. Like I don't know how they get away with it. It's so super sketchy, but you know, like from a spectator's point, it's like awesome. It's incredible to actually see any sort of night drifting in this country, legally, obviously.
I suppose it makes Matt and I's Spring Matsuri night drive just look completely in comparison.
Oh
shit, that was good fun though. I was just thinking about that.
But did you do that then? Yeah. Paddock team event thing.
Yeah.
I did it.
Tom and Ashley in the PS13 green pier.
We were the
I lent Tom my purple flashing light.
Yeah.
Oh, siren.
Yeah.
Oh mate.
That was cool. Back parcel shelf and it looked sick.
How was it? How did you get on?
Terribly. We had a few practice laps. I think they had, like, we maybe got three practice runs in, Tom, was it?
I think we got a few practice runs and we got through one heat, didn't we? And that was it.
Yeah. But I think it was so wet as well. It rained the evening. It was good fun though. We all made it round.
It was an experience.
Yeah. I think I sort of had to straighten maybe a bit early on or halfway round.
Let's be honest. Let's be honest. How often do you get the opportunity to drift at night? It's like
I know. Yeah.
It's not one to pass up, is it?
Yeah, so. I was. I think Tom was in the lead, and I was following Ashley. I was at the back, I think. So yeah, it's really, really, really mint clean S13 right in front of me. It was a bit of a.
It definitely, I envied like places like over in the States that can run like 24-hour events.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like,
you know, they did Driftland SDC at night time this weekend.
Oh, awesome. Actually, yeah, I did see a few
things. They put up, I think, like six maybe towers, like the roadside. Generate a tower light things.
They do in the States, obviously coming from Corollas, they do like a Corolla Matsuri over there 24-hour Grange or Grange or whatever.
Apparently you've got to say with the French accent.
There you go. And those guys that are ripping say throughout the night, which is ridiculous.
It's crazy that there, those Grange night drifting at the Super D and stuff like that. It's insane.
It is the nuts. I do. We don't have the space over here, so we'll have to make do with
all the disclaimer liability.
Yeah. Death.
And the dying tracks, man. Like, they're dropping fucking massive rates.
Yeah. They got so many skid pans as well in America. That's the thing.
Look at the size of some of the car parks. Like, they're never short of, like, venues with the amount of like just even if like pushing into shove and they just needed flat tarmac, like heaps of it. So, like, look what we've done over. Well, look what we've had over here. Like 150 meters squared box. Yeah, and it's been like a massive hit. So,
it's barely the size of maybe what one and a half football pitches, a normal playing field size bit of land. It's like the whole of drifting in England pretty much was going on there.
That's pretty good. Shall be met. Something that's been talked about by a lot of people, but it is like going to be a real shame. As of next year, a little bit of me still hopes that, holds on to this really dying dream that, whoever does buy it, and there's speculation on who. I know it's probably not going to happen, but a little part of me is just holding on that they just.
Oh, for sure, it's got me hopeful, mate.
We can always hope. I'm super optimistic, so to the right to the bitter end. So.
Tear it down overnight, are they either? So, as always,
if they decide to use it for car parking or storage of vehicles, which is probably what is going to happen. It's not, granted, it has got some nice large flat areas outside, but majority of it, which is the actual circuit itself, would need flat in it, which is a huge cost in itself just to store.
They're just going to use the space that's already there, the car parking that's already there, the room, so much space.
Exactly. I would say even the new tenants would be like, oh, look at this massive mini spinner that we've already got here. Why don't we just allocate our parking at the weekends every now and again?
Yeah. I know I went to one of the last Drift Elite at this venue they had. And when we was driving in, it was already taken up with new unregistered vehicles.
Yeah. It's the same with Tinthorpe as well.
And if we finished the lap and you'd run off and you're literally going past these unregistered vehicles pinging up stones, it was hilarious. You could tell they didn't want it there anymore.
Yeah, it's in the process of exchanging hands. It's like that all over. Brentonthorpe's the same. There's a track near me that's used to be a pro drive test track, and then it was they did driving experience days. And it's super close. And Jaguar Land Rover bought it. I thought, oh, brilliant. Okay, they're going to be doing some testing there, working for them, They might be able to, hold employee-only, track days, some of the places, do nearby. But what they've done is, just covered it in cars. So, you look on Google Maps now, and it's just, the whole thing is just crammed. But it's funny because I've got Myra near here, which is obviously the massive crash test facility. It's all by to me, and they actually do hold a track day on the proving ground for employees.
Yeah.
So that would be if only I worked there. Not that I'd be able to drift on it anyway, because I'm sure they probably would be happy. But
isn't it? But I think really, I know it sucks, but the spaces where it would just be coned off, how the outer paddock is, and then. There is no damage. The only thing you got to think of is noise pollution.
Well, you say that. I still managed to find the grass on a couple of occasions on that.
Having said that,
there will be no yellow card system for this track because there is no grass for anyone to hit. 2 hours later, I'm four wheels off.
At least two wheels off.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. When there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. Random. If there's grass, Lewis will find it.
Oh.
Matt dropped out.
I'm still here.
I was going to say, random housekeeping. Lewis, it sounds like you're rustling some tin foil when you speak.
Oh, hang on. Do you know why? Because it was up against my horrible stubbly beard.
Beard noise.
Nice. Right, I'll sit up. I'll let it hang.
Okay. Now, another housekeeping point. It sounds like when we all talk at once, or two of us talk at once, it tries to dip each other out.
Yeah.
So, when Lewis talks, for example, Matt goes almost, I can't even hear him, sort of thing. But I can hear that he's kind of there.
That's not a bad thing.
it just says that you're more important, so it has you go on top of his voice, I suppose.
Yeah, just have a shout off, he's louder.
But yes, moving swiftly into our, well, one of our questions that has been asked by, what is it, I think, Callum and a couple of people, as if we were starting out again as a drifter in grassroots UK drifting, how would you actually go about it? Now, of course, we can always answer like, maybe I just wouldn't start and be rich, but
save the money.
I would go the same route as I started. I personally started with an S14 that was rusted to the ground, but I went straight into like the Beamers and the MX5s, which I would always recommend. I don't know about you boys.
Yeah, definitely.
Low power is better to learn with for sure.
I'd go down the route if there's someone I know started drifting and they got to the point they were old enough to afford a rear-wheel drive car in insurance, and I always envied them because I had a lot of respect, because the first car that they bought, MX5, and they just stuck with it throughout, for example, and they progressed the driving so well because they stuck in the same chassis, rather than there was me on the other hand that progressed at a much slower rate, because I was pissing around, you know, like buying different cars, went through about 5 different chassis in like 1 year or something like that, trying to find out like what kind of liked and stuff like that, whereas in reality I wish I just stuck with one car, got to know it inside out before even thinking about anything else. So I say, if you're going to get into drifting, whatever car you do go for, like, stick with it, like, don't be like tempted to, you know, chop and change it, especially throughout like the first year, 18 months or something like that, where you're really like trying to find your feet the first, you know.
Only when you get to the stage where you can't catch your friends up anymore in a tandem, that's the only time you need to start thinking about more power.
Yeah.
Like, there's always a way. Like, if you can't get the corner wide enough, then you just need to go in faster.
It's not even power related, just whatever you get, really. If it has power, then great. You know, like, you'll probably end up, you know, keeping hold of it for a fair bit longer. But, you know, anything, whatever you get, you know, just really kind of push, like, develop that car, stick with that car, develop it, and actually learn about like setup and, you know, how you run it, you know, make it really work for you rather than trying to, you know, buy a car.
It's a delicate toss up because, say, you are lucky enough to afford a 328 straight away or something,
yeah,
and you have all that power. It depends on the driver because, okay, you've never done a skid before in your life, and someone jumps on the MX5 or someone jumps in a 328, the power difference can be detrimental dependent on the driver. So, of course, naturally, for example, Matt, you suit an MX5 because you literally want to kill the thing and you want to kill yourself.
Anyway,
it's exactly, but that's sort of great old school Japanese style, whereas some people are a bit more laid back. And I think that is from jumping in a more powerful car when they started off.
It's finding the car that suits your style as well. Like, if you like going fast, or if you like just cruising slow, like, you could still have an auto, Aristo or whatever, just chuck it in second gear and cruise around the big tracks. You know?
Yeah, different people will want to do different things, don't they? Some people want to progress the driving and go as fast as you like. Some other people want to just go much angle, much smoke. There's loads of different ways of looking at it, and it's all down to like
really show cars, dress up cars. Like,
the thought of like me having a high powered car munching through tyres just makes you feel sick. So like that's
yeah,
I just couldn't deal with
it. I can imagine.
It makes me feel really sort of not upset, because it's just, yeah. But like, you see, there's people that sort of come up to you at drifters and stuff and say, "Oh, you know, I really like you driving your car, whatever." And they'll say, "Oh, I've practiced this, but I put it away because I need to get more power, or I need to get this lock kit, or I need to get that." I get it almost every person I speak to that asks me about something. And they're like, "Oh, you must be running like 400 brake in your SR." I'm like, "No, man, like, it's locked like power-wise, because I want to drive like a loon, like I practiced in an MX-5 back in the day." And it's just, I always ask now, like, "Oh, what is your drift car? What was your first one?" And it all boils down to, they had a more powerful car, which made them somewhat not lazy, but yeah, as Matt said, like you just learn to just deal with the power and not have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. You've also got builders and drivers as well. So you think, there's a lot of people out there, I know a few that will like openly put their hands up and say, do you know what, I like spending like weekends in the garage building something, you know, more so than driving it. And like there's a little, I don't know, I can kind of relate with that to some like extent because I have been in that sort of position before. But like you got two, so some people just like to build crazy spec looking cars, but yeah, they might not drive them as well or drive them as much as they like, but they, you know, they're more than happy. So there's like obviously different ways to look at it in that sense as well.
Yeah, it's so, different strokes for different folks, isn't it? Like exactly. They're all builders again, are the kind of people that will make a show car and will want to go to all of the shows, whereas for me that doesn't interest me because I've built a car that's a tool, but at the same time I've thrown just a little bit of budget to make it look how I want. But yeah, fundamentally, if it looks like absolute crap and still drives, that's still cool because I'm like, fuck it, you know.
Still doing what you want to do, which is drive.
This is cool, like, yeah. It's just the fact that I wanted it bright red and stupid, like, velour dash because I thought, why not? Fuck it. And that's just a random style choice. But I could have spent that grand on improving the power or something.
Yeah, but you're probably realising yourself that the car's way more capable, I'm sure, like you don't mind me saying, but way more capable than you are. Likewise, my car is way more capable than what I'm able to do. So and that's at that current power level, let alone like all you'd end up doing is just with additional power, is just covering up any sort of, you know, weaknesses or areas which you need to improve on potentially, you know, in your current driving style. 100%. Or driving level.
Yeah, 100%. It was. I held off getting any lock knobs whatsoever until I kept like pushing it and hitting the lock stops and then spinning out. Like you find that point, like, oh, I'm actually being held back now.
Yeah.
You need to realize when you're being held back, not like, oh, I'm just not getting it. The car must be wrong.
You want to go in faster and you want to scrub more speed on lock as well. So you want, you know, it's not just a matter of hitting the lock. A lot of people think, okay, I need more lock because I'm spinning all the time. That can be easily confused as well. Whereas people think, okay, do you know what? I'm spinning all the time because I'm running out of lock. Yeah, okay. That is part of it to some extent. But, you know, like more fundamentally, if you have got more lock, you can throw it on a higher angle. You can go in faster and later and you can scrub more speed on angle, which is like a more, I'd say not a beginning sort of technique. You kind of like develop it quite soon on, but, you know, like after a few drift days, you get to kind of get the feel of it, and that's when you start playing with that more. So,
yeah,
even those lock kits, like when you do have big lock kits on those saves, it's not a smooth drifting save, it's just getting you out of doing a full spin. Do you know what I mean?
The like, only time
you want to throw in high angle, you don't necessarily, you know, you're driving past 90 degrees on entry, your knuckles aren't actually pointing 90 degrees, so. You don't technically need full stupid lock to do rear entries. You just got to set up in different ways, you know?
Exactly. The only time I invested in lock mods was when I noticed I was chucking it in and instead of holding an angle, I would have to keep squirreling back to the lock. It was like, oh, full lock stops. Okay, now I'm just going to spin. Let's put it back to the lock, like what I'm allowed to have through this corner.
And then you pull out of it with the grip that you got.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when clearly
it's just allowing you to hold that angle for longer. It's not. Yeah, exactly.
And then you remember with the additional lock as well, there's very few tracks that we've got like to able to actually, you know, throw any sort of huge lock on and maintain it throughout the corner. You know,
exactly.
Like yeah. More lock, you want more speed to be able to use it. It's all well and good to be able to throw it onto the lock, but to be able to hold that sort of angle throughout the corner, you need the, like you say, the speed and momentum, which not much
actually can gain. The wheel speed
in the UK.
Wheel speed and the angle.
Yeah, in the UK for sure. Like there is not much opportunity. I think Matsuri, the national track that Lewis and I were on, is probably the first time I've properly use the technique of throwing it on lock and just no accelerator slowing down on the lock.
Really? That's like most tracks over in Japan. That's kind of how they set up. They're like fast in and throwing throughout the corner. Whereas like a lot of the tracks that we've got over here, it's not, you know, nothing to do, like nothing that we can do about it. No Drift Land took a lot of essence of Japanese style.
Yeah.
Down throughout the corner, but you know, that's like a technique, and that's like something that I really like, and that's what I really enjoy.
Oh, I don't know if you
to the apex, you know, is the bit that I really enjoy from the apex out. You know, you're on lock, and you know, that's when you can start chilling out. And it's the main entry that I'm all interested in.
Yeah, they've got. I don't know if you guys have run it on the shortest, the tightest entry along the wall. Have you run that layout before? They don't use it. Only once.
Is that outer reverse?
No,
first exit.
Yeah, it's the first exit. So it's a really tight hairpin.
You'd have to explain to anyone else.
Yeah, you'd have to do a really big scrub off a lot of speed against the wall, essentially, and then cut back on yourself, and then cut back on yourself again, and then come back onto the main corner. And do the rest. Yeah, it's really fun, but you scrub in speed, and then you have to gain it back after you've done all the functions.
For any potential listeners that don't know what Driftland layout is or what we're talking about, the layout that you're talking about is probably the closest to like a Mahan throw.
Yeah, it is a lot tighter though. To be fair, it's shockingly tight. You've probably only got, like, on the inside apex is maybe only like 10 foot wide, if that.
Yeah.
You really cut back on yourself. But you've got a lot of room to take it out wide, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you're entering against the wall. Like, it's the scariest one for wall smashes for sure.
The second cut through that STL ran this year is slightly wider than Mahan to let everyone envisage that for a bit. And I was still throwing it in and just I'd get a bit too much power into it, and if I was at Mahan, I would end up in that wall at the end.
Yeah, I think that's the way that obviously now I know you drive as well with like weight shifting and powering over. Just for anyone, I don't know if you know Matt, but when I went out with Tom, I didn't realize that he didn't use the clutch at all. So all he's using is just weight shift and powering over. So I suppose your initial transition onto angle for that second exit, you know got a lot of forward momentum as well, rather than like laterally side to side across the track. Like when I'm going, I throw a feint in, so I've actually like changed, you know, the angle which I'm approaching the corner, so it puts me onto a different line totally.
It was much more slow and laser, I suppose, compared to you. So I can imagine you following me. You've been like, wow, Tom's like having a cup of tea whilst doing this, because it's like I was using, let's say I'm on opposite lock towards the actual corner of the going round.
Mm-hmm.
I would then just obviously lift off slowly, let the wheel do its thing, and then just slowly power on. And whereas, as you said, you'll then be clutch right on me, and that's very like kick instant, and I'm just sort of, it's like a phase transition and you're a cut transition, you know what I mean?
It's totally different styles, like you say, going back to that, but it like works. It's even with people with different styles, you can drive together and it can like really work once you get to know each other's like knacks and quirks and stuff like that.
Yeah, man, it was wicked actually having you so close consistently, because I thought, oh shit, like I've gone massively over center, so it's hard to judge. Because, as you said, at one point I was almost broad sideways, and you thought I was going to spin, and that's when I sort of backed off a little bit, and it was just sort of carrying it through, and then you managed to just kick and get right back to where you were almost instantaneously. And I thought in my head, like, oh, this is probably really hard to judge what I'm doing from your point of view.
I could, well, you get to read it, so I could see I could see how much angle you were comfortable with, and it looked slightly more comfortable. So all I ended up doing, rather than, you know, jerking, like going for the foot brake or anything like that, I just cut across the track more. You know, so basically increased the distance I was traveling. You know, to slow me down. You know, I'm traveling a longer distance over the width of the track. Rather, you is kind of pivoting down the center of the track. If that kind of makes sense. Rather than, you know, clutching for a foot or a handbrake, which doesn't even fucking work, to try and, you know, scrub speed, I just had to try and change like my line. But yeah, it was absolutely fine. Like no issues at all. But it was really good, really good fun. How did you find following?
I couldn't catch you up. Basically, you were going like balls to the wall, like straightening up, getting more speed than I ever could, and then just smashing it in much more aggressive than I was used to as well. So I would sort of catch you up, and then you would sort of just give it a kick and as take a different line than I'm used to. So I like to go obviously really wide, Mr. Wall Run sort of thing, and that's obviously much slower and just a broad sweep, whereas you were like, bah! And just kept it consistent all the way through. So it's easy to judge where you were going, but I just couldn't hold that line because I was either, I just couldn't seem to get right up close to you because that line I wasn't used to.
It's not the easiest of it. I don't run like huge angle when I'm on drift as well, which my car just doesn't, so.
I think the main thing though was I was just slower in terms of my drift. So I would say holding a Mandy down the straight, which you know the no for a fast track run. But I was just naturally more slow. I think was it Destroy or Die's Instagram video where I'm following you, and obviously I'm miles away because I'm choosing to Mandy instead of go straight and follow you. I should have sort of stayed and followed, mimicked you. But I thought, well, I'll control it how I'm controlling it, how I've been controlling it most of the day. But by that time, you're already like in the corner. Like,
I think it'd be hard for you to straight line and then feint enough of a feint, you know, to scrub the speed the opposite way somewhat without a clutch kick. Because obviously you kind of need that like snap onto the lock somewhat. Do you know what I mean? You kind of need a snap onto lock the other way to scrub that initial bit just before pitching in, which I think would be quite hard with powering over because obviously if you're powering over, you're extending it really far. So you'd have to do it a lot further forward, I think, because actually like...
Why, Tom, don't you want to use the clutch when you're drifting?
It's not a case of not wanting to. At Teesside before Matsuri, I was solely practicing clutch kicking and then opposite weight shift into the big national snail. Again,
you just haven't had a lot of experience with or?
No, my background, like sort of rewinding back to the initial question, my background is being the 325s and MX5s. I was Mr. Clutch Kick. and then it's nice to experiment. Missouri was so fast anyway, you're always on the throttle. And it just felt much nicer just using throttle. Whereas T-side was much more okay, I'm going to sort of violently kick it in and then control the fact that it gets smaller and smaller. Again, for listeners, it's just a snail essentially that it's wide, it starts off wide and then gets shorter and shorter narrower?
It's tighter.
Tighter. So that with that, I was opposite clutch kick and then weight shift straight into the wide outer. Then it was foot brake to slow me down and carrying on the centre bit. And that was much more violent, much more snappy. And that's just because it was a tight track, to be honest. But for most of Matsuri, even the two-gay track, I was not touching my clutch.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. I didn't expect it, and it was pretty impressive because I've done it, and I've had quite, you know, a few good track days where I have, or a few good drift days where I have used it like without it completely, but it's just something that I always end up falling back to. So I feel a lot more comfortable. And you know, I think it's probably, you kind of fall into where you, like going back to like we're talking about driving styles, where you feel comfortable and where you want to drive, and kind of that's some of the guys that I've idolized, you know, somewhat, some of the guys in Japan and a few UK drivers I've like looked up to have driven in that sort of style, and to some extent you do mimic what you, you know, what you've seen and like what you watch. So it's definitely plays a part.
Yeah, it's good to experiment, like when we did at Driftland, doing the big corner, coming into the wall at top of third, and kind of got to the point where I felt like I didn't even need to do the clutch kick anymore. I could have enough weight transfer to initiate.
Yeah.
Full throttle, you know, getting up into third, full throttle all the way up to the top of the rev range, and then just throwing the steer in, and it had enough to overthrow it.
I think what we're doing here while we're talking about initiations is totally beating around the elephant in the room here when it comes to initiations.
Yeah, don't even talk about it, the H word.
Yeah, and what do you think about it, whether or not you think it's acceptable or you think you should? Like, how would you recommend someone who was like thinking about learning, would you recommend
it? It's a good place to start. I mean, like, you what all of the Drift 101, like all the old videos, that's the first thing to start with, is just a handbrake turn to get the feel of the back braking out traction. Everyone starts with a handbrake turn, but there's a place for it. Obviously, it is, yeah, there's a place for it, but becoming reliant on it to start a drift is not a good place to start at all. Yeah.
It's purely for practicing. If you've never felt a car slide, I would say never get a hydro until you're like practicing twinning.
Mm-hmm.
So say you jump in your MX-5 and you're wanting to feel what it's actually like to hold, or even just begin a drift, a skid, whatever. That is when I'd say, okay, just get some speed up and then just lift your handbrake and turn a little bit. That's the initial start and feel of a drift, isn't it? That's where it's starting from initially. But I would say, like, when you're actually comfortable with, you know, throwing it at a speed, or you're already doing that sort of wiggle of a steering wheel, going for that handbrake is just a bad habit.
I think it's easier to learn at a later date when you come to the point that you want to get close to people than it is to wean yourself off it.
Yeah, it's an initiation tool at the beginning, and then once you've like you said, Tom, once you're comfortable with the back being out of traction, you need to put it to bed and come up with faster ways, because it slows you down. You know, you come in really, really fast. You see these guys, they come in second gear, get really, really high, rev the bollocks off of it, clutch in for 2 or 3 seconds, and then yank the handbrake. That's not going to carry any speed in at all, is it? It's,
this is where, like, I feel most...
There's no weight transfer. There's nothing. There's no... Like, exactly. It's a beginner technique. After that, the only time you should ever touch it is, like you say, tight twinning.
The only other time that I think it's okay is if, you know, people want to flick in and then they're on lock and then they're actually... You know, dabbing the handbrake, you know, to scrub speed if need be, or to adjust the line, you know, to put you on the correct line.
However, yes, I would say it's acceptable there, but maybe, you know, I'm going to get a sniper on my head now. But the only time I feel people need to do that, or I need to do that, is when I've thrown it in wrong and I need to adjust my line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got the initiation wrong to begin with, so the whole drift is going to be wrong unless I touch my handbrake. So I think that drift, essentially, if I'm going to be hard critiquing myself, is a fail. Because if I was going to throw it in right and I can just dab my foot brake to slow down instead of adjust my line, then I consider that like a win, if you know what I mean. Is that too hard?
You play around with the foot brake and you play around with the bias, brake bias and stuff like that, because you can do a lot with the foot brake that, you know, a lot of people can like do with the handbrake. You know, if you drive right, you can use the foot brake to push you on the right line. You can use the foot brake to tighten your line. There's lots of things you can do with it, depending on how your car is set up and how, you know, well you are actually using it whilst in drift, whether or not you actually dip your clutch when you use it, whether or not your clutch is like still out. Like, it all affects the way that the car's balance when you're actually on the foot brake as well, behaving totally differently as well.
Yeah. The handbrake is a tool, is another tool, and there's nothing wrong with using it just at the right time.
Yeah.
I mean, again, not even using handbrake on entry, it has a time and a place.
I think
knowing its time, not becoming reliant on it. I think that's where a lot of people fall short when they start, is seeing it as an easy way, just quickly yank the e-brake and floor it.
Depends on what you're doing, why you're driving in the first place. Because I feel that you get, this is maybe a dig at some people maybe, but you feel like you got two type of people: people that do it for themselves and they don't really care what the people think, and people that are doing it, you know, to impress others. And it feels like some of the people that, you know, do it to impress other people, yeah, they are doing it to themselves to some extent, well, to obviously quite a large extent, but they'll take the easier option. To get the desired, you know, image or look or whatever you wear. I think the ones that aren't, you know, quite confident in themselves and aren't really bothered about what other people think will persist and like spin and crash and what have you, but all because they're driving the way that they want to drive rather than taking, you know, an alternative, you know, like method.
This leads us into like what the issue of the evolving of drifting is. So obviously we are all sort of fanboys of old school Japanese hard driving, yeah. And that's where our styles are coming from, and that's what we think is, you know, our opinion of drifting is, and you know, that's all well and good, but I suppose people that are starting now, for example, are seeing people in 1,000 horsepower Supras yanking the handbrake, which is a shame personally, because it's like, okay, yes, they are drifting. To them, that is drifting. Like, to me, it isn't, because it's like, oh, well, they're putting on a show. They need to always maintain a...
I can understand why they do it as well. It's a competition. They need consistency. And
yeah,
you can get consistency in both ways, but one is definitely more consistent than the other, and that's why they choose that route, you know. But
I think it's just that's where most of the questions, when someone's actually taken the plunge and bought themselves a rear-wheel drive car and thought, right, I've got the most power I could afford, I'm going to fit a handbrake, because that's what they see. Like straight off the bat, they've gone to whatever event and thought, okay, well, they're squealing in for 5 seconds with their brakes locked up. Like, that's clearly how everyone initiates. And it's quite rare to see someone in a 86 or something. It's not many people go to a grassroots practice day, because why would you, I suppose, unless you're really thinking about getting into it. And by that time, you've already bought your car and you already know what you think drifting is. Like, I'm going to yank the handbrake because that's what everyone's doing. And then we're getting this sort of bottleneck of, what's the word? It's just newbies getting slandered for trying to practice that, because that's all they've seen, if you know what I mean. They're like, why all of a sudden am I called a prick because I'm using my hydro? That's what I've seen the pros do. It's like, well, you have, yeah, we can't argue with that. Like, why are these guys in their 86s saying I'm a knob? Like, yeah.
I'd never say that.
not on tape.
But yeah, but you know, maybe it's just my thought on it, but yeah, it's, if I'm a complete newbie starting out now, all I would see if I'm going to events is people yanking a handbrake and then slamming on the power. And that looks great. You've got smoke, you've got all this stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you get into it, though. I got into it by mostly watching the Japanese videos on YouTube and really not even going to drift events until I was already sold on what I thought was cool.
Yeah.
But that was just me. Like, obviously, you know, the Formula D live stream, the BDC live streams. Like, that's a lot more accessible, and I don't know.
Well, I think the whole reason it took off so much is because of its illegal element, isn't it?
Yeah,
so the first
street racing sort of thing, really. That's what it was for me.
The first time I even knew or saw a car do a drift, a skid, was on the street. And it was from someone doing some ridiculous, like, you think they're going to crash, obviously, because they're entering a corner facing the wrong way. And then they do a feint. And it's like, oh, wow, they've just transitioned. And I looked at that and thought, how the fuck is this guy? Like,
yeah.
I was just overwhelmed by how a car could do that. And that's, as you say, that was my first taste of it. I was thinking, okay, sweet. Like, I didn't see anyone use a handbrake because... that I just thought, wow, okay, I'm just going to jump in a car and do stuff, see what happens. But yeah, I suppose now with the whole crackdown of mid 2000s, you don't see that anymore as a young guy. Like, wow, look at the real drive car leaving a car meet. Like, look at him do that roundabout at high speed.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
I suppose it's the difference of where people are getting into it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys who have seen like rally and stuff, for instance, that they're always getting the back out. That's the most exciting stuff to watch on a rally, and they've been doing they've been doing that for decades. Like
70.
Yeah, it's only like the Tsuchiya. He only really perfected the style of doing it on the streets and linking it into. For speed and scrubbing speed and stuff like that. It wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't.
Well, you know his first Mountain Touge video of him and his 86?
Plopsy. Plus, is it Plus B or Plopsy?
It's something like that. And he's on the handbrake.
It's the best video. That, I think the best video that is. Anyone needs
to. Yeah, the music in that I think I need to have as the intro to this podcast. But. It's like, yeah, he's on the handbrake every corner, obviously, because but that's like us witnessing Tsuchiya learning, to be honest. He's like, even he says himself in like the Drift Global videos, he's like, right, the first thing you want to learn is to just drag it in, feel it, you know.
You need to get your bum in tune, don't you? That's what they're saying.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like we said before, getting the feeling of losing traction on the rear. Yeah.
But in the most controlled way that you possibly can, because you know you're slowing down to a stop if you keep it on. So if you just go into a corner with speed, yank on the handbrake, leave it on, feel it come to a stop, you're like, right, okay,
yeah,
sweet. I've just dragged the arm in. Yeah, that is literally how I learned anyway, because you just feel
it. Even in front-wheel drive cars, that was the most fun thing, just like pulling up with your friends in the car park, like, watch this.
Yeah, get your checks. True story.
Yeah, mate, they drop their pants like.
Yeah. That is how I got most of my girlfriends when I was 17. Yeah. It's just the handbrake. That is just. It's a international language, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, this is taking a tangent.
It's taking a turn. Yeah. So okay.
Plus B.
Turn
it. I've watched. I found it on YouTube. It's called Plus B.
Plus
PLUSPY, and anyone listening needs to watch it ASAP.
I think we'll just link it in the description of this episode.
Yeah, I think what you also need to do, what I've done before, is mute it, open another YouTube window, and put on a Eurobeat mix. It's the best thing you can ever do.
Dancing in the 90s.
Yeah, deja vu.
Oh, God. On that note, we need to actually like make an intro. I think it needs to be the most cheese that we can find.
I don't think did I miss when I joined? Did I miss anything, or have you actually given a rundown of what you actually drive or anything? Because these are just names at the moment. You know, people don't even. I know they might have an idea of what we've talked about for the past 50 minutes, but like, have you actually given a rundown?
Well, so I can add segments. So if we are missing certain bits, like I need to record an intro and then put it before our chat now.
Okay.
So if we feel like we need to, obviously, let our audience know what the hell we're referring to, then we can essentially ask a few people and then we can add segments later to help.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Structure
it a bit. Not a bad right now, obviously, this is the body of it that we can chop up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can just add in, like, oh, by the way,
yeah,
we meant this, you know. So have no fear, whoever's listening. We can actually come back to it.
It's going to be polished.
Yeah, exactly.
So that'll be one. That's fine then. We can skim on. Did you say you had another topic? Did you say you needed to bring up?
Well, so we've covered. We haven't really massively covered car setup, have we? So what I usually get asked after what power you're running is what are the first few mods I should do to my bog standard 3 series MX5 whatever. And well, Matt, yeah, you're gonna start off with your MX5?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really either depending on what car it is, you might not need to do anything to start drifting.
Yeah,
like you know, depending on what diff came, obviously the first thing that needs to happen is your diff needs to lock in some way to drift. So depending on what you need, what sort of budget you have or what you had to start with, that's what you need to first, you know, tackle. Getting your diff to lock consistently.
Yeah,
I think it's paramount to get your drifting with the most simple setup. So, for example, as you say, it needs to lock in some way. That I would say that's probably the only necessity of a real drive car.
Actually,
other than that, it's all your style that you're then learning.
Yeah.
So, say, I actually drive faster than everyone else all of a sudden, which means you need to get this next mod first, for
example. That's exactly how I did my MX5, really. The only things I did were, to be fair, like I said, my car came with a diff that is still now absolutely fine for drifting, so I didn't need to touch the diff. I still haven't even drained the oil or changed the oil in the diff since I bought it. Not that
that's amazing.
Yeah. So it depends what you got. Like, say, the first thing I did was suspension, really, getting it a bit lower, lowering the center of gravity, getting it to transition better.
Haven't thought about Y-Sav at any point, though.
Nah, that was on my list in my mind, but that was to come later, definitely.
You can probably pinpoint it. Like, okay, it makes sense to have a bucket seat so you don't slide into the passenger.
Yeah, actually, to be fair, mine came with red tombstone leather as well, so
it was, lovely.
That was slippery as. But yeah, I think I just went back to the standard suede seat for a bit. Start with.
You can even get seatbelt restraints for stock seats, stock seat belts and stuff. If you've got stock seats, so it'll clip you in position. I don't know exactly what they're called, but I've seen a few guys running that. There's loads of cheap alternative ways, you know, to get out and enjoy yourself.
The biggest deal, isn't it? It's like, shit,
from a sportier model of the same car, you know, like an STI.
Yeah,
I had an STI bucket seat in my BMW, and that was awesome.
Yeah.
And I think those seat rails will bolt onto any sort of Japanese body. They mainly swap over.
I think for the first year of me having my 3 Series, I still had the cream leather seat. And I was literally just...
drug dealer.
I spent most of my time, I spent most of my time holding myself in with my knees.
Yeah, and then you end up with like bruises on the outside of your knees, like where you've been like resting door card and or like center console, just from like constant bashing.
Yeah. You only realise that next morning.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and that was the only time I then invested in the seat. I was like, oh yeah, maybe I should get a bucket seat. There is a reason everyone's got a bucket seat.
Yeah, I think that's it. Really, only tackling mods when you see a problem. Really, that's the like. That's the difference. Like you were saying before, there's a difference between a builder and a driver. The driver, you know, you're only really going to make those changes when you see there's a shortage on the car.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah. There's one
drive around characteristics on like the geometry and stuff. But yeah, essentials like bucket seat and harnesses, maybe. or a better steering wheel to get feel on the road, you know.
Yeah, there's loads of, there's loads of different ways of tackling it, and each person will like tackle it in different ways. But what we're basically saying is, you don't need to go crazy with huge spec parts to get out and have fun. Like some people decide that a steering wheel takes priority over a seat, or you know, seat over wheels or tires, or you know, like different people will choose different routes. But as long as you don't go end up going spending thousands of pounds on, you know, like set up steering knuckle kits and all of this stuff.
If everything was free, it wouldn't be an issue.
You find your own path as well.
Yeah, if you can't afford to go drifting, though, that's the issue. You know, if you're spending £2,000 a month on parts and you've got no money to go drifting, then what's the point? Then you're a builder. You're a driver. Yeah. You're going to do the bare minimum to make sure you can go drifting every month or whatever.
The question shouldn't be what's the first mods I should do. It's what's the first day that I can get
to. Yeah, yeah. When can I go drifting next?
Yeah, precisely. I think people think, oh, I need a car that's like worthy and capable before I can go on a track with people. I think that's the main.
Yeah, that's a big pitfall, definitely. If you haven't been out there yet, then how do you know?
And I've been guilty of this next thing I'm just about to say, but in between drift days, try not to change too much as well. I know you'll have like all these ideas, you'll come back off one, you'll be on a massive high for like the rest of the day, you know, with the adrenaline rush that you've had. The last thing you want to go out and do is like straight away get on eBay or like go on Yahoo Auctions and buy loads of shit. Throw it on your car. Yeah, it might be good quality stuff, but because you've changed so much, you don't know, you know, where it's worked for you or what. So you need to try and like, I know it could be a long and tedious process, but you need to like change bits systematically, piece by piece, and actually like, try and get another day driving in between.
Yeah, and only once you found the limits of the parts you had previously.
Yeah, or if you've broken something, then that's an even more ideal opportunity to upgrade that part.
Limits, then upgrade.
What's
about?
What I think will really help, like listeners, is if we go through what mods we did and what we have done in Jesus. Order.
I've got a ridiculous amount of geometry changes. 99% of my car is down to geometry stuff through to, you know, like just fine tuning over the past 2 years or so, 18 months since actually finishing my Corolla. It's been just most of the stuff has been geometry changes, spring rate changes, and stuff like that, which comes at a later date. Earlier on, you're probably just happy using whatever comes on your coilover kit that you buy. But you know, as like things progress, you start to feel those sort of changes in your car. So that's all where I'm at the moment. You know, we're changing very small things between events.
Same for me, man. All I do now is tweak like alignment, tweak what rates I've got. So I've only this year changed my spring rates, and that was about it. I'm still playing around with my alignment. I think GarageD set up my GeoMasters for a very basic street spec alignment, or as close as you can with the camber I've got in the front. So it's just a little bit more grippy than usual.
You can go a long way with tyres, tyre pressures and geometry settings. Like, and those three things aren't like too expensive. One of them, if you've got the adjustable bits already, you know, like relatively cheap. And you can change a lot in those three pieces alone. Like, they get overlooked a lot. They look like you could just throw a standard, you know, settings on it from, you know, like an old Driftworks like forum thread. And yeah, it might work for you to some extent, but you'll get to the point where you might not like a certain way or characteristic of the car or way it behaves in a certain, you know, scenario. And that's when you need to try and understand and work out what you need to change out of those, potentially out of those three, maybe others, you know, to really tailor it around you to try and make it work.
Every, like, from my first car and then the consecutive two cars after that, still my learner cars, in almost in order, I would buy a seat. I never really bought a harness, but I should have with the seat, for example, just to hold me in. But they were road cars for me as well. So I'd buy a seat. I bought a steering wheel, which to me wasn't a necessity. I just didn't want an airbag possibly going off in my face. That was the only reason I got a steering wheel. And then it was coilovers with no settings whatsoever. I just wanted it to be lower to the ground and feel a bit tighter. And with that, I think I did most of my practicing. A pretty much unset up, unaligned car that was slammed. It felt tighter.
Lewis has gone.
Oh no, Lewis has disappeared.
Yeah, give him an invite. He might run.
Hopefully he can jump back on. But to finish what I was saying anyway, all I had was steering wheel, a seat, coilovers, and a VLSD, which I welded eventually, and that was it. Shall I stop this segment and re-invite him?
Yeah, sure.
All right, mate. I'll quickly do that.
I want to charge my phone as well.
All right. Where we were beforehand was we were just going through our setups. Lewis had said about his geometry. That's his main thing. I said purely the basics that I did on mine. And Matt, I suppose, you just said diff, and that was kind of it, wasn't it? What other mods did you do?
Yeah, I mean, eventually I did the steering mods, but really, yeah, it was just the problem with the MX-5 is it doesn't have much adjustability, so again, it was slam it, get it as low as possible, really, to get it looking cool, and driving it as it was.
I mean, at the end of the day,
that's still pretty much how I drive it. I've got the coilover set as low as I can to get it looking right and just drive it as hard as I can.
Here's another topic. How far do you think, obviously, style is a huge part of it. Like, I'd say almost 50% of it.
More than that, I would say.
More, you know, it's a massive style. Like, how far would you go? Would you pick style over, you know, like functionality of your car?
Mate, very good question.
Every day, because the only time you see them doing the opposite is in competition, where style doesn't matter as much as how competitive you are.
But you'll get to the point now where you're thinking, okay, I want to go faster, I want to do this, I want to do that, and you're gonna have to start thinking, okay, I've got to sacrifice. You know, will it be, you know, wheel fitment to some extent, or ride height, or would you make those choices, or would you just happily sit in the position that you're in?
It's tough. I mean,
The only time I felt held back personally was when I had my huge VSKFs on standard rear arches.
Yeah, it looked tight,
It looked sick, but there was never a point where it wasn't touching the fender.
No, I could tell. You could tell as well. You were fighting against it, like last year at Driftland. When you were sitting on angle, like mid drift, it looked sick. But the getting into it looked sketchy. Like a lot.
It's like someone's holding the brake on.
Yeah, obviously. Exactly. With tire profile with rubbing, causing so much braking force on the front.
But I think Nakamura has proven that you can still run cool stuff like VSKFs or whatever on your car, on your comp car.
Yeah.
And you're sacrificing at most a little bit of like hot boy slammed ride height. Exactly. I think that's the only thing that you do have to sacrifice is you can't realistically be fully hot boy scraping your chassis rails along the ground if you want to do jumps at Abusu, for example, or something.
I guess that's
sure.
A lot of the other circuits that they are, you know, that they have been talking about and driving are like glass in comparison with some of the tracks we get over here. So what we look at and some of the tracks, some of the cars that we try and style the cars off over here are trying to replicate those sort of like ride height and what have you, which we just can't do with the amount of bumps and like undulations on the track. You know, like some of those cars out there, yeah, they've got like the angles of like the lower arms and the bump steer that they got, and the roll centers are so fucked up on all the cars. But yeah, they can get away with them because of how smooth some of the tracks are. Not all of them, but some of the tracks that they run. Whereas over here, there's not, I don't think there's a single track that hasn't got, you know, any sort of bump or dip that would just unsettle your car and potentially, you know, spit you out if you were running that low. I know a lot of guys that do have low cars have to fight with the fact that they have bumps and undulations and the constant, like, constantly fighting the wheel to...
I would say what general consensus then, it would be ride height that you do have to sacrifice.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Like, for instance,
You need to like learn about geometry and suspension.
Yeah, if you're running drop
and correct it.
You can keep suspension travel, change the position of the lower arm massively, like 2-inch drop, actually keep some suspension travel and still tuck tire.
This is all the stuff that I've had to run into on mine. I've got like roll center correction, I've got like bump steer correction on my car, I've got traction brackets on the rear to realign the four links. I've got spacers that sit between my like suspension top mounts and like where they mount in the chassis, so the suspension still has full droop. And like loads of stuff like that, just trying to like correct it all, you know, so it handles like it should. But my car's not crazy low, like by any means, but like handle how Toyota designed it to handle, you know.
Same with my S14, it's as low as it is, but it's because of the geos, all the arms are in their stock sort of travel places in their positions, so there's no sort of, you know, arms pointing to the sky and stuff like that. It's all normal under there a normal.
That's the thing you get with like S chassis, you get extended ball joints and what have you, can't you? To have the roll center correction.
Well, for example, I think, you know, getting the geos, it lowers the car like 50 mil.
Yeah.
That's just putting them on. Yeah.
That's the drop on the, you know, it. Cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's 18 is the line, yeah, with the geos.
Yeah.
What? Because, yeah. Right. Yeah. And so the MX-5 guys, Dan at Destroyer Dyers just released those drop knuckles. I think you can still run 14s on the front.
Awesome. That's what you want.
Yeah, and that looks like you get a ton of suspension travel back, or more low, depending on how you look at it.
Are you going to go for them?
I can't afford it at the moment, to be honest. In all honesty, that's why, the other reason as well, the MX-5 is just, it is good as it comes out the box, just pushing it as hard as you can, really. Don't need to spend much money on it. It's just spending money now on, I don't know, literally, like you say, now I've made some changes. I've changed the tire profile to stop some rubbing and,
I think I've asked you. I've asked you before off recording, if you like, what do you see yourself jumping into once your MX-5 hits the dust? Like, is there a car that you want that's bigger or more powerful?
Definitely an S body. I think like
an S body.
Stick with a 4-seat. I had thought about going to a bigger 4-door, like even getting a GS300 and getting an NA2J. But again, that's a lot. Starting from square one again, like Lewis was saying.
Well, yeah, 100%. You would be
in the MX-5. I could take apart an MX-5 in a day probably and put it all back together again. Like I know,
as you say, yeah.
I feel like
you've learned.
Scared. I'm scared of to get a new car.
I think a lot of. Oh, sorry. I think a lot of the stuff you've learned in an MX-5 would jump straight over into the S-body quite nicely, and it wouldn't take you long to get comfortable. But as you say, if you did jump into a big body 4-door, you would be pretty much learning from scratch.
Yeah, and the weight is going to be such a big difference.
Yeah.
Washing out.
I don't like 4-door stuff.
Like, I had the JZX with the Chaser, and it's, I don't know, it just didn't really do it for me. Like, the distance and the speed.
It's a family wagon.
But it was just, it was cool, man. It sounded good, and like,
so cool.
So it was pretty quick and had loads of grunt, more enough torque. But like, the transitions were just like, you could make a cup of tea in the time like it took to like transition, just because the weight of it, and then you'd fire it in, and you'd have like very little like throttle or like steering input. You were using pure momentum from like the car just to float it in. And I can understand why they use them. They are good cars, but you know, just for what I wanted from a car, they didn't need it for me. So
no, that's it. I think an S body is really the logical choice.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, they go to, because they're still light enough that they can still pit. Like, you can still set them up how you want, and they can still turn in and be snappy, and you can really set them up how you want. Really.
Yeah. I think that's it. They have a lot more adjustability than the MX-5, as I was saying. They don't have
a strut for one, so
exactly. Yeah, dual wishbone is pretty. You're pretty stuffed unless you can get adjustable arms, which are not very available, which aren't readily available. Yeah. Yeah.
They're a happy medium car, man. Like,
oh, but they are what they are. They're just like, they're pretty much a little square, and they just go fast and stick to the road. So
the benefit of S chassis, they come with the drift button. So.
Exactly.
Oh, 100%. If anyone thinks that drifters in S-bodies are actually doing it themselves, think again.
No. It's all the car.
100%. Oh, God.
So much hate.
Well, on that note, boys, was there another thing we needed to address? Or do you think we've covered newbie questions or not?
Yeah, pretty much. Chat shit. And...
chat shit, get banged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Covered some spec stuff without going too crazy, I don't think.
I mean, to summarise, it's whatever car you have picked, you stick with it, for one. Only make sure that the diff locks and is kind of predictable. Yeah. And then from there...
Just have fun.
Exactly. Get as much seat time as you can.
The moment you don't have fun, there's a lot of people there that have, you know, they fall out of love with the cars temporarily. But if it's a constant thing, then you really need to think, am I doing the right thing by, you know, actually carrying on?
Mm. But it's purely like, okay, if you're a builder, then fair enough, be honest with yourself and build a cool car and take it to shows. But if you're a driver, you're with your car, you've barely got a seat that holds you in and a diff that like kind of locks from there, you can feel what is holding you back once you've actually thrown drifts.
Yeah, that's it. Get out there and drift. That's number one.
Yeah, man.
As long as your diff locks, get out there and drift.
It sounds so basic, but I mean, you just got to sort of get it drummed into people's heads. Like, that is all it actually is. We're all fucking around with cars. We're just sliding around corners. Like, it's not a serious thing.
And I think you're forgetting that. If you probably say from your own experience, everyone is dead helpful. So if you haven't got any questions or anything to anyone that is in driving any sort of cars, don't be afraid to go and ask us. Like, they might get one or two, but like 99% of the whole community is pretty helpful, and they'll tell you what ways or give you tips and pointers. So.
Yeah, man. UK grassroots is a nice place to be. There's no, like, I suppose initially you're like, oh God, all these team cars and teams and stuff, and they all know each other for years. It's like, no, just honestly come over with your beers and just sit down, and everyone will be like, oh cool, so how long have you been into it, blah blah blah, and just pick each other's brains about stuff. That is the whole point of it.
Yep.
Oh, silence. On that note then, boys, I suppose I should make some sort of intro.
Yeah.
Do you want to make another segment where we run down what we address, do you think? Or should we just whack on a nice Eurobeat intro and then publish it?
Get some music, put on an intro, done. Get straight Sweet. Into the bullshit.
Straight into the bullshit. All right, boys. Well, thanks. Let's actually write down our next episode.
Yeah.
and loosely stick to it, I suppose. A couple of questions or three questions is pretty good, it seems.
Yeah. I think you need to also cut out, you might have to cut some bits out as well.
Yeah.
We waffled on a bit as well, some of it, so you never know, like, if there's any shite in there, just cut it out.
I mean, that is a podcast for you, though, isn't it? But
yeah, we're listening to an hour of it.
Yeah, but we're listening back, you might actually think, like, Jesus Christ, we droned on a lot of, like, and not only that, there's probably points in there where, to us, makes total sense, but when you hear, like, us talking about it from an outside point of view, thinking, like, what the fuck are they on about? What corner? Like, you know, when you're explaining to someone that knows the track and the event and everything, then it's okay. And those are the times, what the hell? Like, they could be talking about anything.
Well, the cool thing with this is, obviously, we can publish it, and then if people say, oh, you know, you should cut this, do this, we can edit it, like, constantly, just keep changing it if people don't like things. So it might be easy for us to just publish it and be like, right, what don't you like? And then I can just, like, trim that bit out.
Yeah. Do it different next time, you know.
And then you'll get better. And then obviously when you trim it out and listen in the back, then you'll know, like, what's not the, like, worth, you know, lingering on too much. So then you'll get to the point where it'll just be a raw edit, really.
Yeah. I think from anything...
Go on.
The only thing from a technical point of view that I've noticed with this app is if a couple of us are talking, it gets, like, really mixed and it doesn't make any sense. We need to sort of... figure out a way to know when, like, we've finished our sentence, if that makes any sense. Like, if it's obvious for us to just pick it up, so say, oh, Matt, what do you think? And then we wait for Matt to stop, and then we know you're saying it next, like, and then Lewis after, for example.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean, a bit more structure, but I suppose the kind of thing is kind of fluid in a debate, so
yeah.
It's one of those things, it's always difficult when you're on the phone or in person. You kind of, you can read people's body language, so it's a lot easier.
Mm.
So I think it's one of those things you have to, like, overcome.
Yeah. And maybe doing it through Skype as well. I don't know if you guys have got computers that do Skype.
No, I'm a peasant.
Yeah. I'm only using my girlfriend's computer, so I haven't got one either.
The only reason I thought this app was sick is because we can all be anywhere and just come up with an idea and have a chat for an hour and we've got an episode. Whereas
it's not a bad app at all.
Yeah. No. But yeah, it just means we can probably stay consistent and actually just stay doing it because it's not that much of effort. But...
True.
It's still early days, still like no agenda really to this one.
We'll release it. With an intro, see what people say, and I can just adjust. And then obviously for our next one, we know as well. So,
yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. Spot on.
Yeah, all right, boys.
Right,
good to chat. I'll, speak to you soon.
All right.
See you guys.
Cheers, bye. Boys.
Bye. Bye. Bye.